God together and giving him the glory that he's due. This morning, what I'd like to do, as perhaps the day recommended, is look at the resurrection of Jesus. Now, we look at the resurrection of Jesus every Sunday whenever we partake of the Lord's Supper. And the resurrection of Jesus is the foundation of our faith. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, the great resurrection chapter of the New Testament, if Christ was not raised, indeed our faith is vain. The resurrection is the cornerstone of everything that we believe, everything that we practice, and everything that we indeed teach. And this morning I would like to propose this question. What made the resurrection of Jesus unique? Again, what made the resurrection of Christ unique? As you go throughout biblical texts, there are various resurrections. We see various individuals brought back from the dead. Yet, we hold our faith on the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Indeed, our faith, our beliefs, our practices, everything that we do is based upon the resurrection of Jesus. What makes the resurrection so unique that our religion, our practices, our hope, everything rests upon it? So this morning what we're going to do is we're going to look at a few examples of resurrections before the time of Christ, and then we're going to examine the actual resurrection of Christ, try to contrast the two, to understand what really makes the resurrection of Jesus unique. So as I said, as you go before the time of Jesus, there are various individuals throughout the Old Testament who are resurrected. I want us to read just one from the Old Testament, and that's going to be in 1 Kings chapter 17. 1 Kings chapter 17. We'll pick up in verse 17. After this, the son of the woman, the mistress of the house, became ill. And his illness was so severe that there was no breath left in him. She said to Elijah, "What have you against me, O man of God? You have come to me to bring my sin to remembrance and to cause the death of my son." He said to her, "Give me your son." And he took him from her arms and carried him to the upper chamber where he lodged and lay him on his own bed. And he cried to the Lord, "O Lord, my God, why have you brought calamity even on the widow with whom I sojourn by killing her son?" Then he stretched himself upon the child three times and cried to the Lord, "O Lord, my God, let this child's life come into him again." And the Lord listened to the voice of Elijah. And the life of the child came into him again, and he revived. And Elijah took the child and brought him down from the upper chamber to the house and delivered him to his mother. And Elijah said, "See, your son lives." The woman said to Elijah, "Now I know that you are a man of God and that the word of the Lord is in your mouth is truth." So in this story, Elijah encounters the woman by the name of the widow of Zarephath. And this widow, Elijah had brought himself to and had been working with. Well, while Elijah's there, her son dies, and she goes to Elijah and cries, "How could the Lord bring this calamity upon my son?" Elijah then beseeches of the Lord, "Lord, give this child back his life." The Lord listens, and he gives life back to this child. Was the child resurrected? Was the child raised from the dead? Was the child brought back to the land of the living? Absolutely. Had he gone to the land beyond and come back to this realm? Certainly. This child was resurrected. And as you go throughout the rest of the Old Testament, Elijah raising the widow's son is not unique. Another example we won't take the time to turn to, but Elisha, who is the prodigy of Elijah, he likewise raises the Shunammite's son. A very similar story happens in 2 Kings chapter 4. In 2 Kings chapter 4, again, we won't take the time to turn there, but the Shunammite woman, whom Elisha had developed a good relationship with, her son dies. She goes to Elisha, and Elisha brings this child back to life. A very similar story. And as you go throughout the Old Testament, there's a few occurrences of people being brought back to life. Well, here's again the question. If the son of the widow of Zarephath was brought back to life, why don't we have a religion named after the Zarephathites? I'm a Christian. I'm not a Zarephathite. I'm a Christian. I'm not a Shunammite. These were brought back to life. These were brought back to the land of the living from dead. Why don't I base my religion, my belief, everything upon these people? Well, let's go to the New Testament. As we look at Luke chapter 7, there were indeed resurrections before the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Let's look at Luke chapter 7. Christ likewise raises individuals from the dead while he's here on earth. And you'll notice a few similarities between this story and the story of Elijah. Luke chapter 7 will begin in verse 11. Luke chapter 7, beginning in verse 11. Afterward, Jesus went to a town called Nain, and his disciples and a great crowd went with him. As he drew near to the gate of the town, behold, a man who had died was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow, and a considerable crowd from the town was with her. And the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her, and said, "Do not weep." Then he came up and touched the bier, and the bearers stood still, and he said, "Young man, I say to you, arise." And the dead man sat up and began to speak. And Jesus gave him to his mother. Fear seized them all, and they glorified God, saying, "A great prophet is among us." And God visited his people. And this report about him spread through the whole of Judea and all the surrounding country. Jesus again raises a widow's son. Do you notice that little detail? Her only son. The only son of this widow, Jesus brings back to life. Very similar to what Elijah does. Very similar to what Elisha does. Jesus raises this widow's son back to life. But again, here's my question. This boy was from Nain. Why aren't we the Nainites? Why are we the Christians? This boy came back to life. This boy was raised from the dead. Yet my religion's not based on him. And you'll even think through some of the similarities between these accounts. You have a prophet bringing a woman's son back to life, bringing her joy and her entire essence back to her. And Jesus, in this case, you'll notice how the people respond after Jesus does this. Let's look at verse 16. Fear seized them all, and they glorified God, saying, "A great prophet has visited us. A great prophet has arisen among us." After this miracle, they are not convinced he's the Messiah. They're just convinced he's a prophet. Well, again, what makes the resurrection of Jesus unique? We won't take the time to turn to these verses, but if you go through the rest of the Old Testament, there are various other individuals who are brought back to life. As you look, for example, at Matthew chapter 9, Jesus raises a young girl back to life. As you look at John chapter 11, Jesus raises Lazarus back to life. You go to the book of Acts, Peter raises Dorcas back to life. There are various other resurrections of people in the scripture. Yet, what makes the resurrection so unique? Well, let's talk a little bit about the function of resurrection. Resurrection is to restore life. That's its basic purpose, right? To restore life. But let me ask this question. Are any of these individuals still among us today? No. The widow's son of Zarephath died. The son of the Shunammite woman died. The widow's son of Nain died. The young girl died. Lazarus died. Dorcas died. They were brought back to life, but only for a little bit of time. What's the wrong and the error and the limitation of these? Well, ultimately, here's the limitation of them all. They all died. They were brought back to life, but just for a little while. They were brought back to the land of the living from the realm of the dead for a little while, but not for a substantial amount of time. I mean, we don't have a widow's son walking among us from about 3,000 years ago. We don't have a 2,000-year-old little girl walking among us. We don't have a 2,000-year-old little boy walking among us. They all died. Well, with this in mind, I want us to consider and contemplate the resurrection of Jesus Christ. What then makes the resurrection of Jesus Christ so unique? I think y'all see where I'm going, but let's go to the text and let the text guide us. Let's go to Luke chapter 24. Luke chapter 24. Again, as you go throughout biblical writ, various individuals are brought back to life, but they all died. They all went back to where they came from. What happens in the resurrection of Jesus? Luke chapter 24, beginning in verse 1. Luke chapter 24, beginning in verse 1. On the first day of the week, at early dawn, they went to the tomb, taking the spices they had prepared. And they found the stone rolled away from the tomb. But when they went in, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. While they were perplexed about this, behold, two men stood by them in dazzling apparel. And as they were frightened and bowed their faces to the ground, the men said to them, "Why do you seek the living among the dead? He is not here, but he is risen. Remember how he told you while you were still in Galilee, that the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men and be crucified, and then on the third day rise." And they remembered his words. In returning from the tomb, they told all the rest to the 11 and all the rest. Now it was Mary Magdalene and Joanna and Mary the mother of James and the other women with them who told these things to the apostles. But these words seemed to them an idle tale, and they did not believe them. But Peter rose and ran to the tomb. Stooping and looking in, he saw the linen cloths by themselves, and he went home marveling at what had happened. Now, let's note what happens here. The women go and they see that the tomb of Jesus is empty. After Jesus Christ was killed, there was the stone that was put over the grave. Of all facts of antiquity, there is no fact so agreed upon or so truly recognized as fact as that is the death of Jesus Christ. Every religion of the world will accept, I don't say every, nearly every that I'm aware of, will accept the death of Jesus Christ. Except for the most radical of secular historians, they will accept the death of Jesus Christ. And one of the facts of his death is that after he was died, he was indeed buried and that stone was placed there. The question, though, is what moved the stone? The Roman guards were put there by the government to prove that stone wasn't moving. They knew that if his body was stolen, it would have caused an uprising among his disciples. What moved the stone? Well, when the women see it, they recognize this is by the hand and by the power of their God that the stone is moved. When Peter, you look at verse 12, I love the story of Peter. Peter rose and ran to the tomb, stooping and looking in. He saw the linen cloths by themselves, and he went home marveling at what had happened. When these women go in, they tell Peter, "Peter, look at what has happened." He has marveled at what has happened. He rises and he runs to the tomb. He looks in and he marvels. The tomb has been moved. The stone has been moved and the tomb is empty. What does this? It's the power of God working. Christ then comes and he appears to his disciples. He appears to his apostles and he gives them confirmation of his claims and confirms to them all of the claims of faith that they had put in them. And as he spends time with them, he leaves them. But let's notice how he leaves them again. Verse 50, chapter 24, verse 50. Then Christ led them as far as Bethany. And lifting up his hands, he blessed them. While he blessed them, he parted from them and was carried into heaven. And they worshiped him and returned to Jerusalem with great joy. And were continually in the temple, blessing God. What does Christ do? Christ is raised by the power of God. He appears to the 11, appears to his disciples. and confirms to them, yes, I am indeed raised from the dead. The power of God has brought me back to life. But when Christ leaves them, Christ doesn't die. What happens? Verse 51, he parted from them and was carried up into heaven. Christ doesn't return to the land of the dead. Christ goes up to the presence of God. Christ goes up to the presence of the life giver. Christ goes up to the author of life. Christ goes up to the one who is life. He goes up to God. All of the others who were resurrected before, they went back to the land of the dead. Jesus goes to the land of those who truly live. And this is, I think, where we can make an important recognition. Jesus indeed rose, never to die again. And I think there's a difference in the biblical text between resuscitation and resurrection. You know what happens whenever you resuscitate somebody? When someone is resuscitated, they are, you know, choking or heart attack at the point of death, and you're going to do CPR and you're going to resuscitate them. And it's like they are at that point of death and they're going to be brought back. They're going to be resuscitated for a little while, but then they're going to die. When you're resurrected, you're not brought back to die again. You are brought back to live fully for the first time. I would argue all of the so-called resurrections that we see before that of Jesus Christ, it's not truly resurrection. It's just a mere resuscitation. When you are resurrected, you are transformed to live for the first time. When you are resuscitated, you're just brought back to live for a little bit longer before you die. Jesus was not resuscitated. Jesus went to the land of the dead, came back transformed, and then went to the land of the living. The son of the widow of Zarephath, the son of the Shunammite woman, the son of the woman from Nain. What happened to all of them? They were resuscitated. They were brought back for a little while, but then they went right back to death. Christ went to death and then went to life. They went from death to life back to death. They were just resuscitated. And indeed, those before were raised to die again, whereas Jesus rose to never die again. The reason that Elijah and Elisha and even Jesus himself brought back these individuals was to illustrate the power of God. That yes, Christ can conquer death and God has the power to overcome death. But they weren't really resurrected. They were just resuscitated. They were brought back to illustrate the power of God. Jesus was brought back by the power of God, to live by the power of God, and to be transformed by the power of God. What transformation occurred with these others? None. They were brought back to their fragile, mortal bodies, and they died again. Christ came back in a new body, in a resurrected body, a transformed body by which he would live and ascend into heaven. That indeed is the power of resurrection. And as we then consider then the true power of the resurrection, resurrection has the power not to bring us back to life. That's resuscitation. And I think we make a mistake at times in considering the power of resurrection. Resuscitation is just bringing someone back to life. Resurrection is transforming that life. Jesus came back transformed. Jesus came back different. Jesus came back in a new body. The others came back to their old vessel. You remember what happens to Lazarus? Whenever Lazarus comes back, he smells a little bit. He's been dead for a while. And can you imagine that smell? When Jesus comes back, he comes back in a glorified, beautiful body that has been made by the very hand of God. And he comes back to live, never to die again. What then is the power of resurrection? To understand the power of resurrection, I think we need to fully understand what we are overcoming, what we are conquering. Let's go back to the very beginning of the Bible in Genesis chapter 3. Genesis chapter 3. This is right after the sin of Adam and Eve. And as we consider the power of God, we need to recognize and understand what the power of God is overcoming. This is here after Adam has sinned. Here God is going to pronounce his judgment upon Adam. Let's note what God says. Genesis chapter 3, beginning in verse 17. And to Adam God said, "Behold, you've listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you. You shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you, and in pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread, till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken. For you are dust, and to dust you shall return." God had taken Adam, especially Adam, from the dust, and he had given him a body that was supposed to live. Before sin entered the world, death was not in the picture. Before the sin of Adam and Eve, they were to live in perfect harmony and perfect fellowship with their Creator. After sin enters the world, though, what curse is given to the body? "Till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken. For you are dust, and to dust you shall return." What happened to the son of the widow of Zarephath? He went to dust, back to body, back to dust. What happened to the widow of Nain, her son? Went to dust, back to body, back to dust. What happened to the son of the Shunammite woman? From dust, from body to dust, to body to dust. They died. What is the true power of sin? The power of sin is death. The very power of Satan himself is death. The greatest instrument in the spiritual realm that Satan has is the power of death. To take away life. To take away the life that is given by our God. That's the power of Satan. And before this, death was overcome a little bit, but death reigned once more. It is not until the resurrection of Jesus Christ that life finally conquers, that life finally wins, that life is going to be victorious, because death is no longer going to have dominion. Let's go to Romans chapter 5. Romans chapter 5. Again, we know death came through Adam. Through Adam and through the sin that he brought to the world, death entered this world. But as we consider Romans chapter 5, I want us to note the power of Christ. What is the power of Christ? Romans chapter 5, beginning in verse 12. "Therefore, just as sin came into the world through one man, and death through sin, so death spread to all men because all sinned. For sin indeed was in the world before the law was given, but sin is not counted where there is no law. Yet death reigned from Adam to Moses, even over those whose sinning was not like the transgression of Adam, who was a type of the one who was to come." What here is the consequence of sin? What's the consequence again? The consequence is death. But you'll notice what Christ does. Christ is the one who has brought life. Looking at verse 15, "The free gift is not like the trespass. For if many die through one man's trespass, much more has the grace of God and the free gift of grace of that one man, Jesus Christ, may abound to many." Life came through Christ. Finally, death was overcome. No longer would we be resuscitated for a little while, but we would be resurrected forever. No longer would we be resuscitated to a mortal body that would die again, but we would be transformed to a body that would live forever. No longer would we be brought back to a body that would turn to dust, but we would be resurrected to a body that would live in the presence of our God. That is the power of resurrection. What makes the resurrection of Jesus so unique is finally life won. Finally death was vanquished. The tools and the weapons of Satan were taken away. The power of Satan was removed because no longer did death have dominion. Life ruled. And what should our reaction to this be? Well, it tells us a bit earlier in verse 10. If while we were enemies, we were reconciled to God by the death of his Son, much more now that we are reconciled, shall we be saved by his life. There in verse 10, it's critical to understand to the book of Romans. That's talking about the resurrected life. By the resurrected life of Jesus Christ, we shall live. Because Christ died and was raised, we can be saved. Because Christ died and was resurrected, we can live. Because Christ died and was transformed, we can be transformed. That's the power of the resurrection. And ultimately, salvation comes through the resurrected life. It is through the resurrected life of Jesus that we ourselves have hope of resurrection. It is through the resurrected life of Jesus that we have any hope of salvation. And it is through the resurrected life of Jesus that indeed we shall live. So let's now answer our question. What made the resurrection of Jesus unique? Out of all of the resuscitations that had happened, well, it's indeed this. Jesus rose never to die again, bringing us life through his resurrection. That's what makes the resurrection of Jesus so unique. Is that everyone else who was raised to die again. But Jesus was raised to never die again. The others was raised so that they could one day go back to the realm of death. Jesus was raised so that he could go to the presence of the Father. And it is through that power of the resurrection that we indeed have hope of salvation. And we indeed can boldly proclaim, through Jesus Christ, we shall live. Get out your songbooks, please. So let me go back to a question I posed a few minutes ago. Why am I not a Zarephathite? Why am I not a Shunammite? Why am I not a Nainite? Well, the little boy from Zarephath died. The little boy from Shunem died. The little boy from Nain died again. The little girl that Jesus rose died again. Dorcas died again. But there's only one who ever died and was raised never to die again. And that's Jesus Christ. If we have a religion that is based upon someone who has been conquered by the power of death, what ultimate hope do we have? I mean, what makes Christianity so unique about every religion that mankind has ever thought of is Christianity is the only religion that has this idea of true resurrection, that has this idea of the vanquishing of death. Our founder died and lives. That can be said of no other religion that mankind has ever thought of. Our founder, Jesus Christ of Nazareth, indeed died, but he now lives in the presence of the Father. Why would I want to serve anyone else? Why would I give my faith, my hope, and indeed my very life to anyone else but to the one who died and was raised to live? I don't want to die. I mean, deep down, I don't think any of us want to die. And honestly, the desire for death is somewhat unnatural, because that's what Satan wants. Satan wants death. in separation. And that's what death is, isn't it? Death is just a separation, whether separation from God or separation from life. Death is separation. And I think in all of us, there is this longing to live. Why do we long to live? Because our God made us in His image. And in the image of our God lives and we desire to live. What is the only way that we are going to indeed fulfill this eternal longing, that we're going to fulfill this human longing to live? It is by looking to and living in the resurrected life of our Jesus. By looking at the resurrected life of our Lord. That's how we'll live. It tells us in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, "Oh death, where's your victory? Oh death, where's your sting?" Christ took away death through His resurrected life. And no longer does the curse of Adam reign. Remember what God said to Adam? "From dust you came and to dust you shall return." Oh no. Not on this side of the cross. Not on this side of the empty tomb. Not on this side of the resurrection. "From death you came, into life you shall go." That is what Christ has done. He has taken this concept, this tool of Satan, and He has transformed it now that we may live. And my question for the invitation is quite simple. Do you want to live or do you want to die? There is only one that can give you life. All others will give death. If anyone this very morning wants to come forward and partake in the life of Jesus Christ, come forward while we stand and while we sing.